Okay, so you're in law school, right? You've probably been wrestling with the whole concept of conspiracy.
Yeah.
It can get pretty complex,
Oh, absolutely.
figuring out who's legally tied to whom, especially in those big criminal cases.
It's a tangled web, for sure.
And that's exactly what we're diving into today.
Okay, sounds good.
A case that really shook things up.
All right.
United States v. Banks. You've probably heard of it.
Rings a bell.
It's a Fourth Circuit decision from back in the 90s,
The 90s,
and it
yeah.
basically changed the game on how we see those connections in drug conspiracies.
Interesting.
So the court in this case upheld convictions even when some of those involved, the defendants, didn't really have a direct line to each other.
That's interesting.
No obvious link, no paper trail.
So how does that work?
Well, that's the big question, and why Banks is still so important, especially if you're going into criminal law.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's like the blueprint for understanding how far conspiracy law can actually reach.
So we're talking foundational stuff here. This isn't just some obscure legal backwater.
Not at all.
No, this is about the nuts and bolts of how the system handles these massive, sprawling criminal operations.
Right, and that's what we're going to unpack today.
Looking forward to it.
We'll break down the facts of Banks,
All right.
get into those key legal issues, around conspiracy and even the Fourth Amendment,
Okay, I see where we're going.
and then we'll see how it plays out in sentencing,
Makes sense.
and even how it's relevant today with all the modern drug cases.
Because these networks are still out there.
Absolutely, they just keep evolving.
Right.
But it all starts with this thing called the Tidewater Drug Network.
Okay, Tidewater. I'm intrigued.
So imagine it's like 1984 to 1990,
80s? Okay.
and we're in Tidewater, Virginia.
All right, setting the scene.
And there's this massive operation going down.
Massive. All right, what are we talking?
Heroin,
Okay. The
cocaine,
big two.
distribution.
Classic.
But here's the twist.
Okay.
This wasn't your typical, top-down boss man operation.
Not a Godfather situation.
No, not at all. It was more like, well, think of it like a corporation.
A corporation.
Yeah, you had your financiers.
Money men.
Right, they're supplying the capital.
Okay, gotta have the
Then
foot.
you've got your suppliers. They're bringing in the actual drugs.
Sourcing the product.
Exactly. And then it gets kind of messy.
Missy, how?
But you've got all these couriers and distributors.
Okay, so the network spreads out from there.
Yeah, it's decentralized.
So a network, not a hierarchy.
Precisely.
All right, makes sense so far.
And the authorities, they didn't just stumble onto
Yo,
this.
they must have some serious evidence.
They did. Wiretaps,
Ooh, class A.
catching people in the act,
Yeah.
setting up deals.
Hard to argue with that.
Plus, they got testimony from some of the people involved.
Flipping on their associates.
Yeah, those cooperating defendants were key.
Always helps to have an inside man.
Absolutely. And they even managed to monitor some calls
Call.
after they arrested one of the main guys. So they're building this big, complex picture.
Gotcha. A widespread operation.
Right. And the sentences they handed down really show how serious this was.
What are we talking?
Four of them got life.
Life. Wow, that's heavy.
And this was even before the sentencing guidelines really took hold.
So even tougher back then.
Yeah, federal drug penalties were no joke.
They're kidding.
And this brings us to the big question.
Laid on me.
How did they manage to prove this was one giant conspiracy?
Right, because you said some of these people didn't even know each other.
Exactly.
So how do you connect the dots when there are no dots to connect?
Well, that's the legal puzzle that Banks is all about.
And I'm guessing it's got a lot of law students scratching their heads.
Oh, absolutely. Because the defense, they argued pretty hard that this wasn't one big conspiracy.
Makes sense. They'd want to break it down into smaller pieces.
Exactly. They said it was just a bunch of independent dealers doing their own thing.
Maybe bumping into each other occasionally.
Right, but not part of some master plan.
So, a coincidence, not a conspiracy.
That was their argument. But the court didn't buy it.
Okay, so the judge had a different take.
Yeah, and this is where Judge Phillips comes in.
All right, he's the one who wrote the majority opinion.
He did, and his opinion really spelled out a whole new understanding of what conspiracy means.
Interesting. So he's shaking things up.
Big time.
All right, break it down for me.
So, the defense, they were sticking to that traditional view of conspiracy.
You know, like a formal agreement.
Right, everybody signing on the dotted line.
Clear connections, maybe even a hierarchy.
Exactly, but Judge Phillips, he said, no, you don't need all that.
He threw that out the window.
Basically, he said, you don't need formal agreements. You don't need everyone to know each other.
Wow. So what does he say you do need?
He basically redefined it.
Redefined it. Okay,
Yeah.
how so?
He said, what really matters is this idea of a loosely knit association.
Loosely knit. That's pretty broad.
It is. And he said, what binds these people together is a mutual interest.
Mutual interest.
Yeah, and he even put it in quotes in his opinion.
So he's really emphasizing this.
He is. He's saying, look, they might not be best buds. They might not even know each other.
Right, right.
But they all benefit from this larger criminal enterprise existing.
Interesting. So their connection is this shared goal, even if they're not directly working together.
Exactly. It's like, imagine a food truck festival.
Okay, food trucks. I like where this is going.
You've got all these different vendors, right?
Yeah, tacos, burgers, whatever.
They're all competing with each other.
Fighting for customers.
But they're all relying on the festival itself.
Right, the festival brings in the crowds.
Exactly.
Without it, they wouldn't have as many customers.
It's that mutual interest.
Uh-huh, I see it.
They might not be coordinating their menus or anything.
But they're all part of the same ecosystem.
Exactly, and that's what Judge Phillips is getting at.
So in the drug case, it's not about whether Banks knew Copeland personally.
Right.
It's about whether they both knew they were operating within this bigger drug market.
Yeah, and that their success kind of depended on that market existing.
Even if they were selling different drugs.
Exactly. And that leads to the second big point from Banks.
Hit me with it.
This thing called the reasonable foreseeability test.
Okay, reasonable foreseeability. Sounds like a law school exam question.
Oh, it definitely comes up.
Okay, break it down.
So the court is basically saying, look, even if you didn't know everyone in the conspiracy,
yeah,
you should have known that your little corner of the drug trade was part of something bigger.
So it's not just what you knew, but what you should have known.
Exactly. Like if you're selling heroin in a town flooded with cocaine.
You can't just plead ignorance.
Right. The court's saying you can't just bury your head in the sand.
You're responsible for understanding the bigger picture.
And they even ask this question in the opinion, like, did they know that other people's efforts were making their deals possible?
That's a good question.
It is. And it shifts the focus from just your direct actions to your awareness of the whole operation.
So even if you weren't calling the shots, you could still be held liable.
Exactly. And that's a pretty big change.
It expands the scope of who can be charged.
Absolutely.
And I bet the defense attorneys weren't happy about that.
Oh, they definitely pushed back.
Makes sense.
But there was another layer to this case.
Okay, there's always another layer.
This time it involves the Fourth Amendment.
All right, that's the one about search and seizure.
Right, and it all started with a traffic stop.
Okay, traffic stop. Routine, right.
Well, this one led to a lot more.
What happened?
So the police, they pull over this car.
Okay.
And they smell marijuana.
Ah, so that gives them probable cause.
Exactly. Back then, that was enough to justify a search.
Right, right.
But the court, they also issued a warning with this.
A warning.
They said, look, even if you have probable cause,
yeah,
those Terry stops, you know, those brief detentions.
I remember those from Crim Pro.
They have to be tied to the reason you stopped the person in the first place.
So you can't just use the marijuana smell as an excuse to search for anything?
Exactly. There has to be a connection.
It has to be proportional.
Right. Like if you're stopping someone because you think they're driving drunk,
yeah,
you can't just start searching their trunk for stolen goods.
Unless you have a reason to believe there are stolen goods in there.
Exactly. The scope of the search has to be reasonable.
Makes sense.
And that's what the court was emphasizing in Banks.
Okay, I see how that fits in.
It's all about those limits on police power.
Right. The Fourth Amendment is there for a reason.
Exactly. But going back to that mutual interest idea.
The one that expands conspiracy?
Yeah, that one. It raises some serious questions.
Like, what about those low-level guys?
The ones who might not have known the full extent of the operation.
Yeah, are they getting swept up in something way bigger than what they were actually involved in?
That's the concern. And the defense attorneys in Banks, they definitely brought that up.
They argued that it was guilt by association.
Exactly. Like, just because you happen to be selling drugs in the same area.
Doesn't mean you're part of some grand conspiracy.
Right. But the court, they pushed back on that.
How so?
They pointed to the evidence.
The wiretaps, the testimony.
Exactly. They said, look, it's not just that these people were in the same place.
Right.
The evidence shows they were actively participating in this network.
So they were more than just bystanders.
Yeah, they were contributing to the larger operation.
Even if they weren't the masterminds.
Right, and that's a key distinction.
It's about showing that their actions had a real impact on the conspiracy.
Okay, now let's talk about those life sentences.
Yeah, those were pretty harsh.
They were, and it all comes down to how they calculated the drug quantities.
That's always a big factor in sentencing.
Huge. And back then, the guidelines were really focused on the total amount of drugs involved.
So even if you only handled a small amount personally,
you could still get hit with a massive sentence.
Based on what the whole network was moving.
Exactly. And if a court decided you should have reasonably foreseen that amount.
Yeah, then you're on the hook for it.
And in banks, that's exactly what happened.
It makes those life sentences a bit more understandable.
Yeah, but it also shows how those guidelines could lead to some really harsh penalties.
Especially for those lower-level players.
And then there's Boone,
Who's Boone?
one of the main guys in the case.
Okay.
He got hit with even more time
Why is that?
because they decided he was a leader.
So his role bumped up his sentence.
It did, and that's another key takeaway from banks.
All right, tell me more.
Your role in the conspiracy matters.
Makes sense, the higher up you are.
The bigger the consequences.
So even within a conspiracy, there are levels of culpability.
Exactly, and that's something to keep in mind.
Definitely a point for law students to remember.
Now, this case is old,
Yeah, we're talking 90s.
but it's still relevant today.
How so?
Think about the opioid crisis.
Oh, that's a whole other beast.
It is, but it's off of these really decentralized networks.
Lots of players, no clear hierarchy.
Yeah, and banks gives us a way to understand how to prosecute those cases.
So it's a blueprint for going after those modern drug operations.
Exactly, because even if those involved are scattered,
They're still part of that same system.
right, they're all benefiting from the flow of drugs, the demand,
And that mutual interest is still there.
and that reasonable foreseeability test,
Yeah.
it's still crucial in figuring out who's responsible for what.
So banks helps us navigate the legal complexities of these new drug markets.
Exactly. It might be from the crack era.
But the principles still apply.
They do. And you even mentioned a case from 2022.
Yeah, United States v. Glenn. It actually cites banks.
It does, and it shows how influential banks still is.
What was the connection there?
Well, Grand basically reinforced that idea from banks.
That you don't need a formal agreement for a conspiracy.
Exactly. Just that shared interest.
So it's become a bedrock principle.
It has. Courts still rely on banks to figure out these complex cases.
It's like a legal precedent that just keeps on giving.
It does. All right, let's wrap this up.
Okay, key takeaways.
So for all you law students out there,
Yeah, pay attention.
three big things to remember from United States v. Banks.
Right, number one.
Conspiracy. It doesn't need to be some formal deal.
No secret handshakes
Yes,
required.
exactly. That mutual interest idea, that's powerful.
It links people even when it's not obvious.
Number two,
To me.
sentencing. It often comes down to reasonable foreseeability.
How much did they know or should they have known?
Exactly. That determines how much they're on the hook for.
Makes sense.
And finally, number three,
The last one.
don't forget about the Fourth Amendment.
Search and seizure, always relevant.
Especially with those Terry stops.
Gotta make sure they're proportional.
Exactly. The reason for the stop has to match what you're searching for.
So many legal landmines to watch out for.
There are, and that's just scratching the surface.
Yeah, conspiracy law is a deep rabbit hole.
It is, but it's fascinating stuff.
Absolutely.
And for those of you who want to go even deeper,
Yeah, keep those legal brains working.
we're going to tackle another case next time.
Okay, what case?
Kotaikos v. United States.
Another classic.
And this one kind of flips things around.
How so?
Well, it looks at when a conspiracy actually breaks apart.
So instead of one big group.
It becomes multiple smaller ones.
Interesting. So we're going in the opposite direction.
We are. It'll give you another angle on this whole conspiracy thing.
Looking forward to it.
But for now, think about banks.
And those
Yeah,
connections.
those invisible threads that tie people together.
It makes you wonder what networks we're all part of without even realizing it.
It does. And what does it mean to be held responsible for actions that go way beyond what you might have directly done?
Big questions, no easy answers.
That's law for you, always keeping us on our toes.
And that's why we keep coming back for more.
Exactly. So until next time, keep those legal brains humming.
And stay curious.
Always.